Bienvenidos a Líderes Inquebrantables. Soy José Pereira y hoy hablamos del verdadero liderazgo frente a los mayores retos. Esto es Líderes Inquebrantables por Now Media Televisión.
Welcome to Unbreakable Leaders, where I spotlight what it really takes to lead when the ground is moving under you. I'm your host, José Pereira, and this is Líderes Inquebrantables. Today I joined with Dr. Deepak Bhutra. He's a global business leader with 30 years driving growth, strategy, and transformation all over across Asia, Africa, and North America. He's an ACF certified coach who now leads leaders performing under pressure without losing themselves. Deepak's work sits in the intersections of the commercial disciplines and the human behavior because in the real adversity, the numbers don't move unless the people do. Dr. Bhutra, welcome to my show.
Thank you for having me, sir. My pleasure.
Okay, let's start this discussion because I see that you have a long time expertise in multiple countries. You know, you have been in Asia, in Africa, North America, and one of your expertise is leading with pressure, and I love that. So let's start this conversation. In uncertainty, the leaders can really try to have the best practice, and it needed to be tested, their mindset, you know, a clear operational cadence, and the courage to make decisions without perfect information. So this segment, we're going to try to go, how we treat the storms in leadership with a lens of your experience. So let's introduce that topic. What is your best advice for a leader that is facing their own storms?
So first, what is a storm, right? So in leadership, sometimes people tell me that the storm is what I create myself or the storm that comes from outside, right? So for me, when you are going into a storm, the first question is, this is a storm that you expected or unexpected? And then you work around that. So for me, it's very simple, right? A storm is something that you always need to brace for, always need to be aware of. And as you're entering a storm, you need to be aware. And for me, one of the things that I always tell people is that people are very good when they are facing normal times. But when rising water rises, it lifts everyone up. But when receding water goes down, that's when you actually see all the issues with the ship. Look forward to a storm. A storm actually tells you how much you can test the system, how much stress you can take. So that's how I would position myself, sir, as to what leaders need to think about when a storm is coming, is don't get caught up that, oh, a storm is coming and be surprised. You should have an anticipation of a storm. You should be able to visualize a storm and actually have worked through a plan of, think of it this way, Jose, you and I, you know, we are told, guys, we're going to do a fire drill. How many times do leaders actually do a fire drill? What were to happen if, and this is a true scenario, it happened to me, Jose, working for a large PC manufacturer, and we had a big consignment going to a customer, and guess what? The airplane fell into the water. I kid you not, all the monitors were gone that were coming in, flying in for the customer. The customer screaming at us, what do you do? That is what I call an act of God. But if you have run through the drill and you know what to do, then you react to it. Then you pick up the phone and call other suppliers. You go up the supply chain. You steal from other customers and so on and so on. That's how I would answer that question, sir.
You know, you have a lot of experience in different regions and different cultures. What is the first sign that you see that a business is really entering in a true pressure cycle?
Yeah, Jose, you know what? I'll be honest with you. It's not the numbers on the board. It's not. People say it's always the numbers. It's always the numbers. As the numbers go down, therefore the pressure rises. No, sir. It's your behavior. You can have the wrong behavior even when the numbers are going up, because there's a different kind of pressure. I come from a sales background, right, Jose? And when the team is making 101%, the bosses say, let's make 120%. And when the team is making 120%, everyone says, let's make 150%. It's a never-ending cycle. So pressure comes in different forms. But the pressure, the way to detect is, don't look at the numbers, because the numbers can mislead you. You need to look at the behavior. Even in great times, you will see pressure coming through. And that pressure is going to be in its behavior. In a busy quarter, I've noticed, you know, teams work very hard. I get that. But when the real pressure breaks, that's when your behavior is going to distort. And Jose, you need to keep an eye on that. That's when you're going to see people using language which is very political. Focus on the language, political language. forecasts are going to get fantastic. You're going to sit in a room and they're going to tell you, everything is okay, boss, it's all happening. But when you talk to them at the water cooler, he tells you, boss, I'm scared. There's a storm coming and I don't know how to handle it. You really need to then understand, why is that happening? And people start not focusing on what's true about the moment. They start saying what's safe to say, because everyone wants to keep their head down. So that's another behavior. When people start saying things which are very safe, they stop pushing the envelope, you know you're in trouble. And that's when I know pressure is entering the system, Jose. And that's what you need to do. It's always the silence. People that used to be very gung-ho are suddenly all trying to hide away from you because something is going on. Look for that and absolutely make sure. All the elephant out in the room. Guys, I'm sensing something different. Most managers walk into a room and act as if nothing is going on. It is going on. If you're sitting across from someone who has something hanging from their nose, tell him he has something hanging from his nose, right, Jose? Call it out. It's the right thing to do. And that's what happens. People delay these reactions because they think that it's not the right thing or the right time. Or why create unnecessary pressure in the system? No, no, no. You need to. You need to surface reality early, and that's the leader's job. And that's why you need to make sure that pressure doesn't become the strategy of the moment. It's how you recover from the pressure. That's the strategy you need to drive for, Jose. That's how I would address this, sir.
You know, I was thinking about the experience in different regions and cultures because, for example, the Asian culture tend to, because they are very ancient, and they tend to be more calm than taking decision under pressure. And for example, in here in North America, the things are very different. You know, I always say that the Americans don't manage very well the pressure. You know, because you try to always maintain things in a steady way. So when something is going not as steady, it begins to, you know, change everything. So what is your experience depending on the culture or the region? Well, give me some examples.
Here's the problem with that. Jose, we need to be very cautious. Today we live in an extraordinary world. 20 years ago, when we used to go across the world, you would actually have cultural differences on the world. I actually have to dig in deep to see those differences. And my experience has been multinational corporations, and the multinational corporations hire in a certain way. But I can tell you there are certain traits that you cannot remove from people. So in general, when I'm in Asia and when there is pressure or where there's a storm coming, people are actually looking forward to leadership to step forward and tell them what to do. Whereas in certain cultures in the Western side of things, the leadership is not necessarily needed. People have an innate ability to kind of step up to the plate and do something about it because they have a different nuance to it, right? There's a cultural challenge there. So for me, that's the biggest thing. Two, I've also noticed asking for help. This is a very critical one, Jose. I've noticed that in the US, when someone can't do something, they typically will come up and say, I don't understand this, can someone help? In other cultures, people don't walk up. Now in a storm, you need honesty. If you are in a storm and people are trying to figure out what's the safe decision, what's the right decision, you actually need people to feel that they can put their hand up and say, I actually don't understand what's going on, I need help. Certain cultures, some cultures will also come running up to you and say that, Jose, I'm feeling something different. I'm looking at the data. We need to do something different. Other cultures will look at the data and then try to figure out how to give Jose the bad news. And Jose, that's where you lose precious time. So one of the learnings I had was that how do you encourage people to feel that, one, there's not just psychological safety, but also informational safety, and that you will not apply your hierarchy to crush someone. If someone walks up and says, do I have the ability to stop the production line because I sense something wrong? In the same way, I walk up and someone comes to me and says, I heard the decision you were making. I just have a doubt about it. Can I check with you on that? Asian cultures don't typically do that unless the manager encourages it. And I think that's how I would answer your question. Those are the subtleties. And my request to most people is that we too believe that we live in a world which has assimilated a lot. That is true. As an ex-salesperson, I can tell you right now, there are certain characteristics that every salesperson has, Jose. But don't fall into the trap. At the end of the day, we all go back to, and the best way to explain this, as my mother said to me, when someone is sleeping and you go scare them, they scream out in a language. What is that language? It's always the mother tongue. It's never English. And ultimately, that's exactly what happens to human beings. You may be anywhere on the planet, but when the pressure comes, you will go back to your, what I call, the way you were raised, your cultural roots. You're going to go and you're going to say, either you're going to scream, ah, madre, or you're going to scream, oh, God. Something is going to happen. And it's like that.
Yeah. And give me a moment. When your corporate career, where you had to choose between taking a safe decision and taking the right decision.
So To be honest, this is one of those interview questions, right, Jose? Tell me about a time where you screwed up. Tell me about a time where you didn't screw up, right? At the end of the day, I think all of us have made those mistakes, right? So one of the things that I really feel, coming from a sales background, is when I took the decision based on my own judgment, and I said, you know what, the market is rising. Maybe we should look at harder quotas. Maybe we need to put people forward, put more pressure onto the people, right? The politically safe move is not to do that because you're not sure whether the quota can be achieved or not. And I think this is where you need to be very careful. In sales, if you see water, right decision is to actually push harder. The reality is how you push harder. So I had a manager who came to me and said that this is how we're going to push harder. We're going to recapture. We're going to change all the numbers for the people, goal them higher. And here's where I challenged it. I said, you got to understand, even though the water is rising, you're recalibrating your expectations, right? And the only way they can get to it is if they can improve their execution quality. You can't just push a number up and say, just go fetch. You need to do something different for them. It's not just money. At the end of the day, Jose, there's this thing that my mother, she's amazing. She gave me this little piece of advice. She said to me, even if you have only 3 weeks in the year, you cannot wish for a baby. It takes 9 months to get a baby. So it's not Christmas shopping where you out in certain things need time, need patience. So just because you have seen a rising water and you want a higher number, you cannot just implement a higher number unless you have the basics right. And my focus at that time was, how do you get the basics right first before you? And that's when you need to figure out, safe decision versus the right decision. In this case, the safe decision would have been to say, yes, boss, higher number. Yeah, let's do it for the company. And yay, let's go ahead. And then you now have 80% of the team completely miserable at the end of the year because they haven't made the number and they're all in trouble. The right decision is, we will accept it, but here are some conditions and this is how we should do it. This is my recommendation. We first need to build that pathway to the higher number. Team needs some support. We maybe need to get 2 sales operations support team members. Maybe we need to get someone who can help with RFPs. Maybe we need to get someone that can actually do some dialing for us because we can't do all the cold calling ourselves. That is okay. How you then build the decision process.
Well, we're coming to the end of the first segment. In the second segment, we're going to be talking about how can I lead when I don't have all the data. Stay tuned to the next segment.
No te muevas. Regresamos con más historias y estrategias para mantenerte firme cuando todo se te pone a prueba. Esto es Líderes Inquebrantables por Now Media Televisión. Estamos de vuelta. Soy José Pereira y estamos viendo Líderes Inquebrantables en Now Media Televisión. Sigamos descubriendo qué significa liderar sin quebrarse.
Welcome back to Unbreakable Leaders. If you want more conversation like this, you can stream your show in the full Now Media TV lineup, live or on demand. You can see also my podcast. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku on iOS and keep us with us wherever you want to go. You can do it in English or in Spanish, the programming at any time. Want to know more? Nowmedia.tv. I'm back with Dr. Deepa Bhutra. And in this segment, I'm getting practical. In adversity, I'm not just making decisions. I'm making trade-offs. I'm in a negotiation outcome with limited certainty. Deepak, let's break down how you can do without burning out your culture or yourself. So in this segment, we're going to focus on leadership mechanics, decision filters, stakeholder alignments, negotiation tactics, and the protect trust. I'll pull from Deepak's combination of executive experience and coaching psychology to translate pressure into structure. So let's go deep diving in this. My question will be, when you're facing uncertainty, what are the 3 questions you ask to separate the urgency noise from the decision that actually changed that trajectory?
Here's the fun part with this, right? The questions are actually very simple. And I just have also, first thing is that, which decision will actually change the trajectory? Because you can discuss a lot of things, but then you realize that none of them will move this trajectory that's happening at you, right? So if you have a sales slump coming up and you start talking about the market is against us, therefore we cannot grow, that's actually not the point of the decision. The decision is that's a known. there's a trajectory. So which decision? The decision has to be as to what will you do to react to that trajectory. Second, what assumptions are you treating as fact? So the market is down. What's the assumption? There has to be a basis for that, right? So let's have that conversation. A lot of people don't have that conversation, Hossein. It's a bit problematic for me, right? And one of the problems that happens is that organizations will end up building strategy on untested assumptions. They make these assumptions around markets, the teams, or the risk that they're facing. And I've realized in my life that people make these assumptions on very little data, and they don't discuss it. They take it for granted. And then the reality that I ask people is, now that you're doing this analysis paralysis, very simple question. Are you delaying the inevitable, or what? Even if you get wrong, by delaying this judgment, you're still going to be wrong. So you need to do the data gathering fast, get over it, and move on. So the simple question is, what is going to cost you more? The continued delay or being wrong? You'll be surprised that sometimes being wrong is cheaper than delaying the process. Because when you delay things, you are going to be wrong anyway. So this is really interesting. That approach is what I tell people always, that, right? And urgency is, understand one thing, just because someone walks up and starts thumping a table doesn't make that something urgent, right? It's just noise. And this is what I tell people, exclude noise, exclude being loud, exclude being emotional. Trajectory decisions need to be quiet and uncomfortable because they require trade-offs. Do you understand those trade-offs? And leader is the one that knows those trade-offs and knows the difference between those trade-offs and taking the wrong moves. That's how I would tell you about pressure and how those three questions really can help someone make sense of it.
Let me tell you something, because one of the things that not every leader can handle is taking decisions under pressure. So when you're negotiating under pressure, that thing can go fast. What tactic do you recommend to de-escalate without conceding the outcome? So what would be your best advice to a leader that had to negotiate under pressure?
To be honest with you, one of the things I tell people always is that, you know, look at sales as an example. Now, that's my background, right? In sales, if you are going to constantly be thinking about whether I will win this deal or I will lose this deal, then I can assure you, you're not selling anymore. You're not selling. You're just doing something different. Selling is more like service. And this is where, Jose, it becomes extremely important to understand the difference, right? So when you are constantly thinking about the outcome, or that if I make this decision, if it goes wrong, what will go wrong? What can happen? The question is, what if it goes right? We do not spend enough time on that attribute. And this is where I need leadership to stand back and understand one thing first. In times of crisis, and this is again another thing that my mom used to tell me, and this I have to share this with you, Jose, because you'll smile. Jose, when you're on a bus of 60 people and there's an accident and the bus catches fire, look carefully. 55 people are going to run outside, jumping, crushing people in their path because they want to save themselves. There'll be only 2 or 5 people that likely say, you know what, let me be human and help other people. And that's leadership. Same thing in a crisis. In a crisis, you have to make a judgment call in the moment, at the moment. Now, I'm not asking you to die for your fellow passengers. What I'm asking you is to try to show a leadership that says, I know what to do. I will make that call and I will stand by the call I make. So I will help. Now, you may choose. I see 2 young children and I see an old person. I help them first. And then someone accuses you that there were 6 other people you could have helped, but they died. Jose, this is part of business. You got to understand, you win some, you lose some. You have to ultimately stand back and say, you took a decision at that moment, at that time, and you have to live with that decision. You may regret it post facto, but that regret has to be managed, because what I've noticed is that when human beings tell themselves, or leaders tell themselves, I took the wrong call, they therefore end up taking not the right calls also in the future, because something is holding them back. So I always tell them, the bridge to success is to figuring out and not holding yourself. Show some self-compassion to yourself. Leaders are very good. And some people tell leaders that you're a narcissist. You know what? Because they move forward with decisions. And the reality is that they need to take those decisions because people expect them to take those decisions. If not you, then who? That's how my boss used to ask this question of me. If not me, then who, Deepak? And I then realized he's got a difficult job. No one else can do his job. That's why he chose to do the job. And we're fascinated with how much money he makes, but not with the reality of how much risk he carries.
Let's talk a little bit about your webpage and your books, because I see a lot of your books in the background.
Yes.
Talk about your books and your webpage, please.
Sure, absolutely. So, Jose, this is going to really blow your mind. I've been an ICF coach for 15 years, right? And you're a man of the world. You also like to talk to people, learn about people, understand people, right? Your show talks about the unbreakable leader. To me, that's powerful, right? When I was thinking about unbreakable leaders and the way you position your show, here's a question for you. What breaks a leader then? And what is a leader? And I'll tell you one thing. Leaders are those that have survived the first 10 years of their careers by doing the right things. They have managed the hustle, they managed their ambition. And when I looked at leaders that were failing or people that did not become leaders, I actually realized they are people that don't have the right guidance at age 21 to 28 to understand how to channel their energies. And Jose, I made it my life's mission to actually write a book called Rise Up. Let me get my finger right. It's right over there, sir. Rise Up is 30 frameworks that I have used in my entire coaching career. This book is what I call my personal dedication. It was supposed to be a 200-page simple book that people could read and finish. It ended up being a 520-page I would like to call it a masterpiece, but as my wife says, it's heavy enough to hit a car hijacker with Deepak and get away in safety. And I just shook my head. The book is designed for a 21-year-old person who has just survived college, got his first job. He thinks he's top of the hill. And you know what, Jose? He doesn't realize he's got 30 years of his life ahead of him. And the next 5 years are the most critical, because what he does in those 5 years will define how much money he will have at the end of 30 years. So this book is very different. It talks about career progression. It talks about how to manage up. People think that managing up is just going on LinkedIn and reading about the LinkedIn billboard that says toxic managers will take the life out of you. And I keep telling people, so what? You read that. What did that do? And by the way, you can move from one toxic manager. You will find the next one is a toxic manager. Then you're going to move to the third one. You cannot move from managers to managers because you can't cope with it. You need to figure out a way to cope with it, right? I'm not telling people that, you know, the probability that you can choose your manager is very little, right? Jose, you agree with me. And even if you can, what stops a truck from hitting that poor guy one day? You cannot bet your life on one person or two people, right? So the ability to manage up is a very critical attribute that I wish they would teach us in high school. I kid you not. I wish they could teach us that. Because the biggest surprise I had was how many times in my career, Jose, I had to change myself. This is what this book is about. Figuring out very early. And at age 21, people typically think that this is an executive coaching function. Jose, how many of us can afford a $100 coach or a $200 coach at age 21? I mean, people tell me, you know, it's the kids should just drink less Starbucks. What are you talking about? We're confusing things here. So this is why I wrote this book. And I really enjoyed writing this book. And I'm now, you know, pushing on the book. I'm actually building a business model out of it to actually build a global platform for English speaking people who need support. I really want to help people. Back to you, sir.
And where can people can find you? Where can people find yourself and your webpage? Talk about it.
So very easy, sir. If you want to find me, just go on LinkedIn and shout Deepak Bhutra, you'll find me. If you're looking for me online, I'm deepakbhutra.com. You'll find me there as well. I run two businesses. One is on sales coaching and sales training. Once you type my name in, they'll all pop up. And the other one is my startup that I've just started, which is Rise Up at Work. In fact, the Rise Up thing has become a big thing for me. It's a framework that I put together, and I'm taking this framework and making a business out of it. I'm one of those authors who was challenged by his publisher. Writing a book is fine, Deepak. You're going to sell maybe 100 copies, 2,000 copies. But the opportunity that you have with this book is how do you monetize it? How do you productize it? And that led me to building out my own business, Jose. Jose, I think you're on mute.
I'm sorry. We're coming to the end. We're coming to the end of this segment. Next segment, we're going to keep it where we left it. We want to talk about neuroscience because this is something that really interesting to me. Stay tuned. We're coming to that next segment.
No te muevas. Regresamos con más historias y estrategias para mantenerte firme cuando todo se te pone a prueba. Esto es Líderes Inquebrantables por Now Media Televisión. Estamos de vuelta. Soy José Pereira y estamos viendo Líderes Inquebrantables en Now Media Televisión. Sigamos descubriendo qué significa liderar sin quebrarse.
Welcome back. I'm José Pereira, your host of Unbreakable Leaders, Líderes Inquebrantables. In the last segment, Dr. Deepak, we left something that I really, really love talking about, neuroscience. So let's start this segment talking about that, because I see that you coach using behavioral and neuroscience. And for me, neuroscience is something that really is not only trending. You know, the pastor of my church, he's a big neuroscience fan. And he always tells me that, that neuroscience has been confirming what the Bible said 2,000 years ago. So that's exactly many things that you can read in the Bible or many of other books, spiritual books, are things that were told 3,000, 2,000 years ago that now, today, neuroscience are confirming. So let's start there. How you use your coaching with neuroscience?
Jose, here's something very powerful in what you said, right? And I think I just wanted to acknowledge something in what you said. A lot of people make the mistake of confounding spirituality and religion as being either something that is being forced upon them or so on. And my response is as follows. I don't need you to be, you can be an atheist for all I care, right? At the end of the day, the human brain works in a certain way. If you use the Ten Commandments or any religious scripture to dictate your life, I have no problem with that because last I checked, I don't see any problem with the Ten Commandments, right, Jose? So why I have no issue with that? No problem, please. In fact, I would argue, I live my life and I'm not even a Christian. So it's not cultural appropriation. Here's what I would say about neuroscience. I want people to just step back a bit and just think about it, right, Jose? You are in a negotiation and you are going to become emotionally involved with it. You're going to start defending your position because your position feels like your identity, right? And here's where neuroscience tells us, if you want to argue position, you need to shift the conversation to consequences of the decision, not about your emotions. If, as an example, if we follow this path, what becomes easier? What becomes riskier? And who absorbs the downside? Now, when you bring emotions into it, you know what you're thinking. He must absorb the downside. You're thinking win, loss. And if you're thinking win-win, then you have a different emotional outcome to it. You can use neuroscience in a different way. And what happens is that you need to also understand neuroscience talks about ego versus the reality, what's going on at that point, right? In sales, as an example, the biggest reason why salespeople exit the sales function is because they get burned out. And they get burned out because they get consistent no or pressure, and that hurts their identity. And neuroscience is very straightforward, right? It actually says that, you know, there are certain ways in which you control your brain's responses to certain things. So how do you activate that? What do you think about that? And I always tell people that, you know, you need to understand one thing. Clarity and calm are not there that they make you look weak, because that's what we've been told, right? But our ancients also told us, if you have two ears and one mouth, use that ratio, right? So people ask me, wait a minute, in everything you said, I didn't pick up any neuroscience in it. And I said, that's the whole problem. We've been told about neuroscience in such a way that we think it's some exotic mathematical formula driven. It's not. It's simple, basic precepts. Why do we react the way we do? Why do we want to run away in fear? Why do we chase after certain objects? Why do we incessantly scroll on our phone? Because we're getting a dopamine hit. It excites us, right, Rose? Those type of things. Now, all I can say is that it's very simple. You need to focus on those emotions that will make future decisions easier for you. And to do that, you need to be in control. Fear, in my opinion, is the biggest thing that hits the neural system first. And if you can control fear, then you will never have constricted thinking. That's how I would talk about neuroscience, right? And then, of course, there's more angles to neuroscience. If you look at sales as an example, Jose, we play neuroscience games all the time, right? In the way we position our pricing, in the way that we say fear of missing out. By the way, this is only a specialty Friday. If you buy now, I'm going to throw in 15% discount. That's also neuroscience at play. A price point of $9.99. Why is 1 cent less than 10 more attractive than $10, if you think about it, Jose? But guess what? So neuroscience is a tool not to, I would say, cheat people. It's a tool in which you can use to build relationships. And I use neuroscience more importantly to make you understand yourself first. What is your reaction to a circumstance? If you can predict it, then you can control it. That's how
Let me tell you something more, because you were talking about fear, and the contrary of fear is the faith. You know, so instead of having fear, try to have faith, and faith has to do with the neuroscience. When you believe in something that maybe hasn't happened yet, but you strongly believe that it's going to happen, there's where you're activating that. And it has also to do with the resilience. So I'm going to go now to another question related to that, because one of the parts that leaders often get wrong is that they demand resilience in their team, but they build their system and they punish it. So let's talk about the culture, the incentive, the performance, when the conditions are volatile. What are your thoughts about that?
So if I understand the question, you're talking about what conditions should a leader create so that resilience in the team is built up and something
Correct,
like that,
correct,
right?
yes.
So I've always told leaders one thing is that always start from a basis of telling people that even you are learning. And when people hear you use language which is open like that too, there is safety in any conversation with me. I'm not out here to punish you. People therefore know that if it's a safe conversation, they know they can say what they need to say to you. And a very simple truth that I can tell you is that people will come to you with ideas. And one of the tricks that I realize is that decision-making by leaders, if you make it with a bias in mind, that bias becomes self-evident. Mm-hmm. And when you are not listening to the people that are telling you what they have in their mind, you're doing something very, very critical, which is I learned the hard way. When people used to come to me, Jose, and tell me that, boss, I think we should do it this way, blah, blah, blah. And then I would say, no, stop. You know, we tried it 20 years ago. It didn't work. So therefore, and by the way, I'm very smart. I can see 10 steps ahead of what you're trying to do. I don't think it'll work. Someone who had the courage once told me, you know, boss, once you said that, I just felt like I didn't need to open my mouth anymore in any meetings. And I says, no, no. What are you talking about? He said, but that's what I felt. And that's when I realized leadership is actually a crucible of fire. You may know all the answers. Of course, you have the authority. Democracy has to end at some point, right? Jose, if you have a deadline and you have senior leadership asking to do something by Wednesday, you cannot be, you know, jumping around till Tuesday, making sure everyone's happy. At some point, you got to draw the line.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, people will respect you for one, remaining what I call vulnerable, remaining authentic, and remaining glued to your values. The fun is when your values change, where the pressure changes. And that's people watch you. We think that the people aren't watching us, right? And by the way, I make those mistakes myself. As a startup founder, I can tell you, Jose, I'm making a lot of mistakes lately. Why? Because the pressure is getting to me. The pressure gets to me. Now, let me tell you why I said that to you. Because I acknowledge it. And the first thing a leader needs to do is he needs to acknowledge that his behavior is changing. He's taking a lot of pressure. And as my wife would put it, when Deepak is under pressure, he needs to take the dog for a walk. Simple answer, right? Makes you surprised. Wait a minute. You don't need to pop any pills. You don't need to drink cold water. I mean, yeah, you can drink the cold water. There's no issue with that. But don't pop pills. Don't go for another drink. Go take a walk. Take the dog. He enjoys the company. Celebrate life with him. Go ruminate, cry for 10 minutes, but then come back with a vengeance. Let's get back to business. Every person's recovery is very different. As a leader, you need to be in a certain state of mind, right? I've worked with leaders that used to be very different at 6 a.m. and very different at 6 p.m. And I assure you one thing, Jose, it's very difficult to maintain. You don't realize it, but having a two-face to how you operate, trying to be different at work, trying to be the real people that survive the longest are those that maintain the same cadence throughout. You remain vulnerable, you remain available, you remain teachable. You are also teaching others. And course correction is a matter of course. You don't get upset. And if you feel that the data shows you need to change your decision, change it. Your team will appreciate it. They will realize that this man is actually not stuck with his dogmas or with his things. He's willing to change. And that's when you get... I've always said to people, being a leader is easy. You're a leader because people are following you. It's followership that makes leadership. Respect the followers and leadership follows, not the other way around.
Let me tell you something. That's so true what you're saying, because when you remain authentic and humble and say, hey, my friend, I made a mistake. so that people can understand that when you do it in a very authentic way, the people not only can understand you, it can even be empathetic with yourself, and that makes you more human, more trustful. So that's true. That's really, really true. So thank you for your advice. So we're coming almost to the end of this segment, but I don't want to skip talking about, there's something that for me is important in the leadership, has to be with all what we're talking about here, is that adaptability. What is your concept about that? A leader being adaptive, even in the pressure, even in the circumstance. What do you think about a leader being adaptive?
To be honest with you, Jose, very simple. If you want to be transformational, you need to be adaptive. If you are not willing to be transformational and you don't want to grow in your leadership role, then don't be adaptive. No issue. Don't adapt. You will not be a leader very fast. So the reality is that if you wish to be a leader, then you cannot avoid conversations. You don't want to. What can this organization be, should be? Most leaders talk about the future vision. Few talk honestly about the identity that needs to happen with it, right? So for me, adaptability is a very simple method. You need to not stay emotionally loyal to the old way of functioning. You need to understand what's happening and what the new way of functioning. And as you move back and forth, you actually realize you're adapting by nature. Two, don't take things for granted. What worked yesterday may not work tomorrow.
Correct.
Be ready for that surprise, right? How will you do that? And always understand one thing. If you have a certain status today, and if everything is very certain and you've got familiar ways of working, you're going to realize that when the change comes, you're going to be confused. And a leader can never be confused. So to me, it's about uncertainty. Change is normal. It's when you are uncertain. So a leader's job is to remove that uncertainty from their mind and the uncertainty that their followers are facing. And if you keep doing that, you'll always remain adaptable. People are not scared of change. People are scared of uncertainty. Tomorrow morning, we're going to move the building from this building to that building. Everyone's like, wow. And then you tell them, but the movers are going to get here by 8 o'clock and everyone will get two boxes and we're going to give one person to you to carry your stuff out from the building. Then they're like, cool, now I know what's going to happen. And I think that's the balance that leaders need to put together all the time.
Yeah. That's all true. That's all true. Well, we're coming to the end of this segment. So next segment, we're going to be talking about the wrap up of this wonderful conversation. Dr. Deepan, thank you for being here. Stay tuned and wait for the next segment. Stay tuned.
No te muevas. Regresamos con más historias y estrategias para mantenerte firme cuando todo se te pone a prueba. Esto es Líderes Inquebrantables por Now Media Televisión. Estamos de vuelta. Soy José Pereira y estamos viendo Líderes Inquebrantables en Now Media Televisión. Sigamos descubriendo qué significa liderar sin quebrarse.
Welcome back to Unbreakable Leaders, Líderes Inquebrantables. Watch this show in Now Media TV Originals whenever you want. Live on demand. You can see there my podcast. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and keep the conversation going wherever you are. Want to know more? Go to www.nowmedia.tv. We're in our final segment with Dr. Deepak Bhutra. This has been a wonderful conversation. We talked about the strategy, decision-making, negotiations, team systems. Now I want to get very personal because the real resilience isn't a quote in a wall. It's a repeatable system to protect the performance and the persons. So in this segment, we're going to land this episode with a clear resilience operational system for leaders. The boundaries, the recovery, the identity, and the sustainable performance. So I'll anchor to Deepak's mission and work through the Rise Up work and his book, Focusing in Actionable Steps Leader Can Implement Immediately. So your book, Rise Up, talk about your book.
So we did an intro on the book earlier, right? Now, given the way that you explained this segment, I actually wanted to just talk about a few things for leaders, because I really think it's important that leaders get something out of the book, even though I wrote the book for 21 to 28 year olds. But what we're teaching that at that point is that here's the biggest thing. A lot of leaders actually think that hustle culture is the norm. Hustle culture is not the norm. Your value does not rise in proportion to your exhaustion. Your value does not rise in proportion to your endurance. Who has taught us all this stuff, right? Jose, it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. And this is where the fun part is. I tell leaders, if you're always switched on and you're always pushing, you're always sacrificing, then in your definition, is that success? You've got to ask yourself, really, is that the right definition? And here's what really is important. I always tell people ambition is awesome, but self-abandonment is bad. You really need to find that balance. How do you find that balance, right? So we cherish hard work. We cherish smart work. We get that. Now, here's the problem. Is you're in a depleted state and that becomes your identity. Constant hustle, your constant switched on is now, Deepak is known to be someone who's always switched on and never sleeps at night. It's awesome. But at the end of the day, the human body cannot cope with that, Jose, whether you like it or not. And you're going to drop it. Someone once challenged me, Jose, and said to me, Deepak, no one died from a lack of sleep. I said, yeah, that's true. He says, oh, you agree with that? I said, yeah, because the human body will shut you off. You'll be sitting at your desk and you'll just sleep. There's no ways. At some point you will. So he says, so therefore there's no harm done. I said, yeah, there's harm done. Now let's take you away from your desk and I put you into a car. You have not slept for 2 days. You're driving a car. What will happen to you? And then he shut his mouth up and he looked at me like, oh, I see your point. I said, exactly. If your lack of sleep, your driving is impaired and you can kill yourself, then you have to ask a question. How do you know that the decisions you're making in your depleted state are the right ones? How? I challenge you. Hustle culture has become so pervasive that, you know what, we are actually forgetting, and I credit to you, sir, for reminding me, the wisdom of the ancients, the wisdom that our elders taught us about, right? They told us a few things, right? There's no joke when people tell us 8 hours of sleep, you know, get your beauty sleep. There's a logic to it, right? They tell us, you know what, guys, before you go to bed, don't eat too much. You know, don't do this, don't do that. And we think of those as being, you know, stupid things that old people do. You know, what did they know? They didn't know. They didn't have smartphones. How would they have known? Basic truths don't. Basic truths don't die. That's how I would explain that concept.
You know, we're coming now to the full cycle because we started the conversation talking about leaders under pressure. So I want to make you the question that when a leader is under fire, they often lose clarity. What are the fastest methods that to regain direction without making a reckless move?
I love this question because it is a very common frustration. And in leadership, those who figure this out and they can regain and retain clarity under fire are actually the ones that become leaders. So for me, this is not just a leadership metric. It's actually a metric that says, how do you welcome to leadership as a club? How do you qualify for that? And the fastest method to that is that you need to pause. You need to separate what's happening. Then you need to put together a solution, which is a sequence of events that need to happen. Here's what people do. They get into an emotional spillover. They start talking about how to react to something. And when you are in a reactive mode, you're going to make all the difference. You're going to make all the wrong decisions. You also need to understand that you're interpreting certain things. That interpretation could have its biases because you're under pressure. Look very carefully. You need to understand what are the facts. Now separate the facts out first. What really matters? I always tell people, you know, that, hey guys, hey, stop. There's data, then there's assumptions, and then there's politics, and then there's fear. Try to figure out what to do with the data and understand the assumptions. The other two, try to keep them out of the mix. Because when you put those together, you're going to create a monster. The good Lord created human beings with some magic of his, correct? And I can assure you, what you'll end up creating is another monster. Something will go wrong somewhere. So this is what I always tell that people, you know, that if you pause, separate, and you sequence what's going on in your mind, you will actually restore clarity. And clarity will set you free. That's how I put it, Jose. Clarity will always, you know. And here's what happens. Pressure, when it comes, people assume that pressure is therefore the ticket that allows them to misbehave. Right?
Yeah.
So, and this is a very reality here that I always talk about, right? It's what you need to do is that when clarity is needed and when clarity is wanted, right? Clarity comes because you've decided not to partake in chaos. And when you don't partake in chaos, that is what you need to do. And clarity is the only way to solve chaos, because if you don't have clarity, you're going to actually add to the chaos. So it's a catch-22 vicious cycle, right? So I always tell people, just pause, just hold. Even in sales, right, Jose, we have this saying, when a customer asks you a question, which is very difficult, you have the answer. Don't jump in, lean forward and give the answer. He says to you, whoa, that price point sounds very expensive, Deepak. Oh, no ways we can afford that. That's too much. The old Deepak would say, oh, is the price too high? I mean, what's your budget? Tell me your budget. And then you give them a discount because it's the easy way out, right? The smart Deepak says, I hear you. Could you elaborate a bit and tell me what benchmark are you using to assess my product pricing? Have you received competitive quotes? What have you seen in those quotes? And have you done a comparison? Would you like my help to help you compare and to make sure that we understand each other? Because I believe we bring different value to the table. The goal is to ask questions and keep asking questions so that you never give definitive answers to something that tricky, because people don't know what they're actually buying. They don't. It's too early. So you need to ask the right questions. Don't jump straight to a discount. And that's the type of stuff that I always caution people about.
You know, when you were talking about clarity, I was thinking in one of the main attributes that a leader has to have, that is, in under any circumstance, always keep being calm and focused, because that is what drives you to the clarity. And taking a pause is so important.
Pause is so important. Very powerful statement.
That's okay. So let's talk about that. Give me one boundary that the high performer leader must set, even when the results are online, and how to communicate it without less committed.
Yeah, this will blow your mind. This will blow your mind. People ask me this question, Deepak, you know, is this about blood sugar? Is this about energy? Is this about my emotional state? Man says it's about everything. Never make major people decisions from a depleted state. If you feel that you can survive on Diet Coke and cigarettes, don't make decisions that impact other people's lives on that. Because what happens is that when pressure is high or you have this biological clock that works differently, leaders are tempted to handle talent issues, conflict, or restructuring while exhausted or emotionally flooded. I can assure you there's enough research on this, Jose. They actually did some research on judges, right? And they actually found judges were making better decisions post-lunch after they'd been fed. But when judges skipped meals, or that it was mid-morning, about 11-ish, 12, just before, those decisions they found were actually going against the person. So when they did, they actually found a statistically significant difference between the judgments that were being passed by the same judge for the same type of case. After 2 o'clock, he was more lenient, but before 2 o'clock, he was not lenient. And they attributed it to blood sugar levels. And I sat there completely stunned when I read that research. Jose, here I am. At age 30, I was skipping meals. I would wake up in the morning at 6 o'clock and I would tell my wife, I'm not hungry. I got a work to do. I'm going to go to office. I'll eat something at office. And Jose, I was just banging on and on and on. I would skip lunches because guess what? Lunches is for losers. I'm a hectic guy. I'm going to conquer the world. I got 5 phone calls to make and so on and so on. Jose, this is why it's very, 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 very important that we understand boundary setting is critical. Boundaries also teach culture because people are watching you as a leader.
Well, Deepak, this was a wonderful conversation. We're coming to the end. So thank you for being real world leadership. And thank you for this wonderful conversation. If somebody wants to know about you, where they can contact you?
Like I said before, get on to LinkedIn and shout Deepak Bhutra. And I'm the only Deepak Bhutra on LinkedIn that got Deepak Bhutra. The poor other guys got Bhutra 666, Bhutra Deepak 922, so on. I'm old enough to have captured the right one. Bring me your issues, challenges, guys. I'm a sales coach. I am an ICF trainer. I do a lot of work with people. I am a shoulder that people put their head down and ask what's up, what's going on. We live in a post-COVID world, Jose, and it's very important for people to understand life changed for a lot of us. A lot of youngsters are actually demanding a very different. Yesterday, 20 people would tell you they'll work for 10 years for the same company. Today, you'll only find 2 people telling you that they'll work for the same company for 10 years. We have entered a different era. And if leaders are not managing for that era, you're in trouble.
Well, that was a wonderful conversation. Thank you. Thank you for being here in this show. This is Unbreakable Leaders, Líderes Inquebrantables, for the next time. Thank you.